For many people with migraine, sleep is both a cornerstone and a contradiction. We're told that good sleep is essential to managing migraine, yet migraine often robs us of it. Poor sleep is one of the most common and frustrating triggers. Dr. Fred Cohen is one of the few specialists board certified in both internal medicine and headache medicine, giving him unique insight into how sleep and migraine are deeply connected and how we can begin to restore rest that truly heals. Dr. Cohen, welcome back to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you for having me again.
Let's start with the big picture. We all know a bad night's sleep can trigger a migraine, but what's actually happening in the brain? How does a lack of sleep or even too much sleep lower the threshold for an attack?
So this has been a puzzling question when you ask scientists and doctors, what does sleep actually do? Like, what's happening? You know, we dream. And it wasn't until recently we sort of knew that answer. You know, when we sleep, our hearts beat slower, our stomachs churn less, but the brain's running. You know, we call it rapid eye movement. The brain's not stopping. And what the brain's actually doing when we go to sleep is it cleans itself. Something called the glymphatic system activates. And what that serves to do is to actually clean the brain of any toxins or whatever. Because during the course of the day, thinking, feeling, all that stuff, the brain working, it uses neurotransmitters and whatnot. Well, like any fuel, there's a byproduct. And that byproduct could be inflammatory. So when we sleep, the brain cleans itself and gets rid of this waste. But if we don't sleep, well, it's not really getting rid of the waste, and that's pro-inflammatory, which is why you feel icky and groggy when you don't get good sleep. And that's why it could trigger a migraine attack, because migraine, in a nutshell, while it's a complicated neurological condition, is a condition of neuroinflammation. So if your brain's not cleaning itself, it's prone to inflammatory situations, hence could lead to more migraine attacks.
Can you explain a little bit about circadian rhythms and how they can relate or how they relate to migraine?
Sure. So think of a circadian rhythm like a schedule, you know, meaning our brain, you know, keeps sort of, if you will, track, like, oh, that it knows habits and whatnot of when to sort of start, you know, going to sleep, waking up, et cetera. Like, for instance, prior to where your brain is used to going to sleep, there's a release of melatonin. And then likewise, when it's time to wake up, it's similar. So again, it comes into the brain prepping itself. So it goes back to the fundamental that if you interrupt your circadian rhythm, you're sort of interrupting these, if you want to call it, protective mechanisms your brain has to take care of itself. This is also why people might notice it's not just a lack of sleep that could lead to a migraine attack, but a change in sleep patterns. You know, I have myself experienced when, let's say, I sleep it on the weekend, even though I might get 10 hours of sleep, and that's a lot of sleep. Usually feel rested, I'll get a migraine attack. It's again because we're sort of shifting this norm of what our brain's expecting.
That's a great way to explain that. You've written about melatonin. How does it naturally or through supplementation impact migraine?
So melatonin has a couple of roles. The main one that we've heard of course, is initiating sleep. You know, when the sun goes down. So that's actually how your body knows to produce it. There's something in our brain called a pineal gland, and that's actually what releases melatonin. And it's when that activates or releases it is when we start getting tired. What actually triggers that is blue light. This is why you might in night mode or your computer, your iPad, your phone, it looks more orange, right? It's because it's getting rid of blue light, because blue light, the sky is blue. Like, our brain's, you know, evolutionary trait, it knows when it's light and blue outside, it's daytime. And when it's not, it's nighttime. Which is why you also have seen like computer glasses, those orange things. Again, it's to allow so lights aren't stimulating, hence messing up your release of melatonin. Now, when it comes to melatonin, it's not just sleep, it's also neuroprotective. We've seen that from various studies that melatonin also has a neuroprotective component to it. You know, there's a lot of neuropeptides going through our brain, and they all have regulatory functions, and melatonin's no stranger to that. So it's not just helping with the sleep, but we do know it helps having this protective neuroinflammatory component as well. So it's more than one mechanism that melatonin supplementation does to help with migraine.
So it's doing a dual purpose.
Correct. It's more than just sleep.
Is there any way to boost melatonin naturally?
So the first and foremost is, again, making sure you don't have stimulating lights. That's why I would encourage any electronic device from your computer to your phone to do night mode. You know, have that setting. And that way, again, you don't want these stimulating blue lights that could interrupt your natural production of melatonin. Good sleep hygiene is not using computers an hour or so before bed. Again, you don't want that stimulation, and to let your body naturally produce and release melatonin.
You mentioned the lymphatic system, the brain's overnight cleaning process. One of our viewers, Fatina, asks, what happens when that system is disrupted by poor sleep?
So yes, the lymphatic system, again, it serves to clean the brain of any inflammatory junk, waste products, etc. And, you know, it's interesting when we talk about, you know, the phrasing, the wording of it, because it works like the lymphatic system. It's a brain, it's going to get an extra letter. It gets a G, called the lymphatic system. But again, it's a bodily function that serves to cleanse itself and get things, you know, working correctly. But this only really activates in certain phases of sleep, such as, you know, REM and whatnot, which means if you're not getting quality sleep, so not just sleep. People think, I can't tell how many times I'm evaluating a patient. They're like, oh, yeah, I get 8 hours. But then I diagnose obstructive sleep apnea or some kind of sleep disorder, and they're not getting good quality. If you're not getting to those deeper stages of sleep, your lymphatic system is not activating. And therefore, it's, you know, that could trigger a migraine. So again, it comes to cleaning the brain of these pro-inflammatory markers and whatnot, which is what the lymphatic system serves to do, and that only activates in deep levels of sleep. So high quality sleep is very important.
I think many people feel guilty or even frustrated when poor sleep triggers their migraine, as if it's like their fault. How do you help them reframe that to see sleep as like a biological system that can be retrained rather than a personal failure?
I want to stress that there should be no feelings of personal failure, you know, when it comes to these, you know, triggers, if you will, meaning there's lots of different triggers and whatnot, the things that shape our migraine. And it's so easy for a provider to sit here and be like, oh, get better sleep. That's hard. That is hard. I struggle with that myself. It's so easy, do as I say, not as I do. And I stress that with my patients. Whenever I talk about these things, such as stress or sleep, I say, listen, I know this is not going to be an easy thing, and we're going to change it over time. But that's why sleep hygiene is so important and something to sort of focus on that I explained. You're not going to change this in a single night, but something to be aware of, you know, keep those details in addition to your headache diary, sleep diary, and we can work on that and find ways to achieve that. And it's a day-by-day, visit-by-visit thing to improve and to make a difference.
So improving sleep is overall important for migraine management.
Absolutely. Migraine is not just here, take a pill or injection. Migraine is multiple different, you know, avenues to go down. And that's why, like what we're discussing with sleep, lifestyle modifications are critical. When I meet a patient, you know, I'm asking all these details, not just about their headache history, their mood, their diet, their sleep, etc., try to identify other areas I can improve to make a difference in their headache health. You know, ultimately, I would love to get patients off medication if they can. And by doing so at future visits, again, evaluating these things such as sleep, so that maybe in the future, they don't have as much of a medication burden. A lot of my patients would love, you know, to get off their treatments. And again, that's them for everyone. I want to stress that everyone's headache and migraine is unique and different with different treatments, different triggers. I never ever tell patients, don't compare yourself to a friend or someone else with migraine. They're all different and we treat them all differently. And everyone needs their own plan.
Correct. There's no one size fits all.
No.
Many of our viewers report waking up with migraine or being woken up with pain in the middle of the night. What's happening in those early morning hours that make attacks more likely?
Well, that's a bit of a difficult question because there could be multiple things. So when someone tells me they're waking up in the morning with a headache, and if it's a migraine attack, you know, I'm naturally going to want to investigate what's happening in sleep. You know, there could be many different sleep disorders, one of the most common being obstructive sleep apnea. I diagnose OSA weekly. You know, it's a very commonly undiagnosed thing. And also, many people think obstructive sleep apnea only happens in those that are overweight. You have to be, you know, obese to have that. And that's not true. You know, while yes, overweight is a risk factor for it, but I've diagnosed it in people who are extremely skinny. Obstructive sleep apnea could happen many different ways. What obstructive sleep apnea is that something is blocking the way when we sleep, maybe part of how our throat's structured, our tongue, that's very common. And there's numerous reasons why that happened. And it's a common thing as we get older, our body changes. It's not just weight. Some people will just, you know, how our bodies are shaped, it naturally happens. And that's why there's a lot of questions I ask, such as, do you know if you snore or you wake up in the night? One of the biggest things is, does your partner, if you sleep with someone else, notice that your breathing sort of changes irregularly in the night? If any of these are yes, I start getting suspicious for sleep apnea, and then I'll refer for a sleep study. Now, sleep studies used to be what I call medieval. When I was back in med school, you had to go to a sleep lab and stay there. Now it's very simple. You have like an iPad-looking device that sits next to you when you sleep. So, you know, I encourage, if you're concerned about, you know, having sleep issues, get a sleep study. They're very accessible and non-invasive nowadays. And it's a very easy way to see, hey, do I have sleep apnea? Because sleep apnea isn't just a problem for sleep. It is a known risk factor for stroke and high blood pressure and a heart attack. It leads into a lot of other conditions. So it's very important to identify and treat sleep apnea if it's present. And then otherwise, other conditions such as insomnia, delayed sleep cycles, you know, this, and it's not just me assessing that, you know, I might send someone to a sleep medicine specialist. There's a lot of different sleep disorders that, again, through these patient interviews, we figure out, hey, is this going on? And to get that treated. Because again, it's not just treating the migraine, these affect other facets of life as well.
How often do you see a link between snoring, morning headaches, and even chronic migraines?
I would say, you know, it's common. And again, snoring is not indicative of obstructive sleep apnea. It can make me suspicious, but I'm not going to make the statement, if you snore, that's it, you have sleep apnea. No. And if you snore and you have morning headaches, again, I'm going to investigate it, you know, see if this is related, but I wouldn't call it slam dunk, like, oh yeah, that's it. Some people naturally snore and it's not affecting their sleep patterns or their ability to get high quality sleep.
What about restless leg syndrome? Why are more people with migraine so much more likely to experience it?
Restless leg syndrome, you know, has comorbidities with other neurological conditions. Also, it's actually common in those who have anemia, although I'm not saying that's related to migraine. And restless leg syndrome is that I would say when I've seen in patients, a lot shrug it off, just think that they feel sort of antsy and whatnot. But it's a reasonable thing that if you're feeling that, to bring up to your doctor, because there are treatments for that. There's things that could, and it could, without a doubt, hence its name, could really affect, you know, your sleep and falling asleep. So it's, you know, if that's something you're experiencing, I highly encourage you to bring up to your doctor. It is something that we've seen associated with migraine. Again, I wouldn't call these slam dunks that, oh yeah, everyone with migraine has this and vice versa. But it's a simple question to bring to your doctor to or provider to be assessed for.
You mentioned insomnia. How common is it with people with migraine?
I would call it a comorbidity. I don't know if I would call it super common. I would say it's common that people think they have insomnia and it's not. Well, insomnia has many different kinds. And when someone comes to me and I'm suspicious of insomnia, I need to see what their sleep habits are like. A good chunk of time, it could be just poor sleep hygiene or something else, or what we call delay sleep cycles, which insomnia is the difficulty of falling asleep. But also it might be that your brain's not naturally going through other cycles of other stages of sleep. And again, I'm not going to take all the credit for this. This is where a sleep medicine specialist will come in and I would make that referral. And there's a longitude, different varieties of treatments to go for. Besides lifestyle modifications, there's prescription medications, a whole variety of that with different strains, but also therapy. There is insomnia cognitive behavioral therapy that psychiatrists and therapists use to assess and treat that as well.
It often feels like a chicken and egg problem. Is migraine causing insomnia, or is insomnia causing migraine? How do you begin to untangle that cycle?
I get a lot of questions like this about, is this causing my migraine? Did that give me migraine? And the short answer is no way to tell. You know, I tell patients that, you know, I wouldn't go too far down that rabbit hole, just that let's treat them. You know, it's likely that these would have happened on their own. But there's no true way to sort of come to that. But like when someone comes in with insomnia and they're like, oh, is my migraine causing this? I can't tell that. But oh, if I cure my insomnia, if I treat my insomnia, will I help my migraine? Well, yes, if you treat one, it should help the other. I wouldn't go as far as to make the claim it's going to do it 100%, but it's definitely going to help, which is why it's always worthwhile to explore these other conditions to see if it is apparent and to diagnose it and treat it.
Are there any red flag symptoms that someone should never ignore?
Well, two things that we haven't brought up that could definitely affect sleep, and I diagnose a lot, is untreated or poorly managed anxiety and depression. A common symptom of depression is it affecting your sleep. And it could do it in numerous ways, making it difficult to fall asleep, oversleeping, but also fragmented sleep, meaning that you go to sleep, you wake up 3 hours later, you're not able to fall back asleep until an hour or so later instead of sleeping through the night. Now, I'm not trying to say, oh, if you have sleep issues, you're depressed. No, but my point is depression or anxiety could present like that. So again, in my patient visits and interviews, I do ask about mood and sort of dig into that. And I'm not like, oh, it has to be depression. No, but there are patients that, you know, weren't really attributing it to that or concerned about that. But it's like, hey, I think there might be a mood situation going on that could be attributing to it. Again, it's not all of it, but could be affecting it as well. So it's very important to assess for those. And that's something, again, that's a simple conversation with your provider to see if that's at hand.
We often hear about good sleep hygiene, but that advice can feel frustrating for many people with chronic pain. What are the two or three most high impact rules that the migraine brain really needs to prioritize?
Sure. So there's a lot of things with sleep hygiene. And yes, it could be difficult to adhere to these kind of recommendations, but it really does wonder to, you know, your sleep. One is having any food 2 hours before bedtime, you know, really anything stimulating. So like I make the recommendation to not watch TV or be on your phone an hour or so before bed. Do not use your phone in bed. And I'm saying that as a millennial, listen, I know, you know, you want to use your phone in bed, but don't do scroll. Because again, you want your brain to sort of, what's the point of sleep hygiene? I'll start with that. It's getting your brain to know it's time for bed. If you're doing something stimulating in the bedroom, you know, TV, phone, stuff like that, the brain's not going into sleep mode because it's doing an activity. And let's say you have trouble falling asleep. It's worthwhile to, if you really can't fall asleep, to get up, go to a different room for a few minutes. Don't do a stimulating activity, but then go back to your bedroom. Because what we're doing, what the point of sleep hygiene is, training the brain to know this area, when I'm in here, you're going into sleep mode. Not that we're doing an activity and stay up.
I am definitely guilty of that myself. And even staying in bed for a long period of time, just staring at the wall, it's kind of, when you say get up and walk around, it's not something I would think about doing because, you know, you just want to try to go back to sleep.
Don't start cleaning. I get that all the time. People are like, oh, I started decluttering. Like, no, that's stimulating. Don't read a book. Either just go into another room, think of, you know, just relax for a few minutes, meditate, whatever. You're just chilling in that other room and then go back to bed.
What is the role of behavior approaches such as cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia and improving both sleep and migraine?
Sure. So insomnia, cognitive behavioral therapy, ICBT, is where, you know, I don't want to, when I bring out the patients, they get like, oh, you know, words like you think I'm crazy, blah, blah. It's like, no, that's not at all what that means. It's just think of it as another measure that help with insomnia that's not taking a medication. You know, it's sort of exercises, if you will, but I'm not going to call it meditation. And I'm not an expert at this. I'm not a therapist. I don't give ICBT. I refer people to that. But think of it as sort of brain exercises, if you will, and strategies to help fall asleep. And no, it's not just laying there and counting sheep or something like that. That it's proven, tested strategies to help, you know, get someone to start their sleep cycle.
We sometimes hear the term painsomnia, those nights when pain keeps us awake. How do we handle that when we know we need sleep to recover, but pain is keeping you awake?
Right. So this is something I've spoken about before. You know, I've been asked this with like the term painsomnia, which is right. The migraine or chronic pain is keeping them up. You know, I find that term weird because I don't associate them with insomnia. It's your condition is not optimized. When patients bring that up, it's like, no, I'm not blaming insomnia. We need to get you on a better migraine regimen. You know, if the pain is enough to keep you awake, clearly, you know, something needs to be changed there. So it's either changing their rescue medication or something like that. Because again, I don't call that insomnia per se. It's that the migraine attack is not managed well. We need to give you something to help relieve the attack to the point that you can go to sleep.
So medication management may need to be relooked at.
Absolutely.
So many people seem to feel lethargic or fatigue during an attack or even after attack. What about napping? Is sleeping off an attack helpful, or does it just sabotage your sleep schedule for that night?
Well, this is going to be different for everyone. Naps affect people differently. What is a nap? What is a nap? Like, let's take a step back with it. I'm actually asking a question. What is a nap? Do you know what a nap is? I don't know. I'm not, because I always want to be like, you know, look up what a nap is. And when, like, if you're not feeling well, yes, rest. But also, you don't want to get to a point that it affects your sleep cycle, that, you know, now you're going to go to bed late. For instance, if I go down and sleep for 2 hours, you bet I'm going to have now stay up later. So it comes to, it's different for everyone. I have friends and patients that could take a 4-hour nap and still go to bed on time. I can't do that. So there's no one true answer for that. It's more of that, yes, can a nap help? Sure. People that feel sleeping off a migraine can definitely help. But I'm not going to call that the treatment for everyone. And again, I'm not trying to interfere with someone's sleep cycle. So there's not, you know, I'm not trying to give a bad answer, but it is different for everyone. People, like, I'm going to make the example for myself. Naps, I don't typically nap because it will affect my sleep cycle negatively, but that's not the same for everyone. So for people that you notice, if you take a nap for an hour or so and it doesn't affect going to bed at your normal time, that's great. But if you feel it does, then maybe a nap not isn't the answer for you.
For some people, even when they've tried the sleep hygiene, they, you know, they've done the CBT insomnia principles, their sleep remains poor and unrestorative. So for those that are stuck in that chronic pattern, how do you begin to truly reset the sleep system?
At this point, I would say that I would refer them to a sleep specialist. If it's that resistant, you know, we're not having success, it needs an expert. Just like someone coming to me for their headache and migraine, there are doctors for sleep. And the answer, you know, and again, I'm not bored in sleep medicine, but this is where maybe they require pharmacological therapy, medications. Is there something else at hand? Like, there are conditions like, you know, neurological conditions that don't allow people to achieve certain levels of sleep. And that's where medication comes in. But if someone, I have a patient who's reporting what you described, then I'm sending them to one of my sleep specialist colleagues.
There's a behavioral approach called sleep restriction therapy, which sounds counterintuitive. Yet it's sometimes used when the first line approach hasn't worked. Can you explain what it involves, who it might help, and how it can safely be applied in people with migraine?
So this is a term used with different definitions. So when I hear this, what I think of, and at least what I think how it should probably be done, is when I hear sleep restriction, is sort of what I brought up early in the talk. Oversleeping can definitely trigger a headache and make you feel icky, which is why my alarm is always set for 8 hours. And I always wake up, because if you sleep in Fred, you're going to get an attack. You know, so that's where I know the term sleep restrictive is not sleeping in. I don't know of it of getting less than 7-8 hours. You know, there's a sleep specialist about that. But I do encourage my patients not sleeping in, not doing excessive sleep. And it's a big misconception. I have a lot of patients that say, oh, I need to have 10, 11 hours sleep or I feel icky. And listen, everyone's unique. I'm not going to be like, no, that's not true. But, you know, the odds are that for most, like, yes, oversleeping can be worse than things.
And I think, too, when it comes like to the weekend, we tend to either, you know, sleep in a little longer than we do during the week. And then, you know, we're getting these attacks. And so that's great at, you know, information.
I figured this out for myself when I was in residency, where on rotations where I'll be working in the hospital, getting 4 or 5 hours of sleep, no migraine. But then once I switch the clinic or something where now I don't have to be up at 5, I'll be up at 9, migraine attacks. I'm like, wow, I'm getting more sleep. It's the change in the rhythm. It's the change in schedule.
Another one of our viewers, William, asks, I've heard that if you do nothing else but improve your sleep, migraine improves too.
So again, not to diminish, you know, anything he asked, there's no one true treatment or a universal treatment. I really want to stress that because I get a lot of patients who get stressed when they did something their friend did, didn't work for them. And I say, hey, like, this is unique for everyone. So there are individuals that improving sleep might not have an impact. And again, I don't want that to be discouraging. This is where talking to a provider such as myself, we have to find what works for you. I get this all the time with diet as well. There's no one true diet to rule them all. Like, it's different for everyone. And the same thing goes there, that I'll admit, I can't really answer that question in this time frame. This is where you meet with someone like me, and there's a lot of questions I ask you. We get to the bottom of it, and I might not get to it in one visit. You know, I got to understand your migraine attacks, your lifestyle, and then to identify what may be affecting you. The example, this is a crazy, I don't want to say the word crazy, but a very uncommon example is, long story short, over the course of about half a year, I had a patient who was getting migraine attacks that we were treating with medication, and she was bringing a headache diary. And over time, I noticed they were happening in the late morning, and get me more information, write down more. And I actually got what she would make for breakfast. Her trigger were eggs. That is not common, but for her, that was it. And I said, no more eggs. Let's see what happens. And her migraine attacks went down a lot. Now, then she said, hey, my favorite food's omelets. I'm like, I don't know what you want me to tell you. I just figured out your trigger. Sorry, it's going to be egg beaters or egg substitutes for you. But the point is, for her, it was that, which I haven't seen that again. But that's my point. Working with a provider to sort of find that for you, that it might not be sleep. I have patients of mine who are well controlled migraine, who are working like crazy, getting 3-4 hours of sleep. And I'm like, that's crazy. But for them, it doesn't affect them. So that's why I don't want to make sort of any kind of blanket statement that it might not for you, you know, that might be not about what's affecting you, and we got to find what is.
You mentioned the headache diary, and it's not a new concept. Nope. You know, there are some that you can put, you know, how many attacks you're getting, what that looks like, what were you doing before? Is there anything else that you should be tracking in that diary?
What I recommend the patients when I first meet them is start with that. What, like, when you get a headache, where it was, how bad, what did you take, how long it lasted? Start with that. Then they come back to me and I review it. And I, based on that, I might start saying, okay, add this, add that. It develops over time. So I don't want to ever also overwhelm someone. Start simple, expand later.
For someone listening who suspects sleep is a major problem, what is the best way to bring this up with their provider?
Simply put, first off, you know, this is something you could bring up with your primary care doctor. If you have a headache doctor, headache provider, bring this up with them. That bring up, hey, like, I'm concerned about my sleep. You know, no patient should ever be shrugged or diminished for a complaint they bring up. You know, I would say if that happens, you need to see a new provider. But it starts with a conversation. You know, ask yourself, and you can start with a sleep diary or keeping track, and then see if it affects you. Again, you might, and it's not that you have to investigate that. Your provider should, you know, ask follow-up questions to help investigate that. I know if I had a patient, you know, on their own bring up sleep, that there are certain questions I'll start asking, expanding on that. So it starts with just initiating that conversation with your provider. don't, I would say, rely on Google or ChatGPT, you know. While, of course, I always encourage patients, be your own advocate, do your research. You're always, you know, no one should feel discouraged to do that. But also to make sure you're going down the right path, talk to your provider.
So it should feel more like a partnership.
Absolutely. If you ever feel discouraged or diminished from your provider, you need a new provider. You know, you need to have trust in your provider, without a doubt. And if you, you know, in my opinion, it is a failure on the provider's part if they're not able to, you know, what's the word I want to use? Like, if a patient ever brought up a complaint, I would never be like, ah, it's nothing. You know, now I might say, oh, hey, I'm not concerned about it. Here's why. Have that conversation and make sure we come to an understanding. Not just seems like, nah, nah, nah.
Yes, I know. I know a lot of people feel dismissed with bringing up certain topics with their provider. So, it's good to hear one of your advices is to, hey, if this isn't working, you might need to find a different provider.
Absolutely.
We have covered a lot, but for someone who's been living with fatigue and migraine for years and feel they have tried everything and nothing has changed, what would you tell them about what's still possible?
There's a lot. I don't even know where to start with that. I mean, again, if you have feel that your migraine has really put you in a rut that you're not getting out of it, are you seeing a headache specialist, someone boarded in headache medicine? You know, I know, again, I'm not trying to diminish primary care providers or neurologists, but it's the same thing why you see a cardiologist for serious heart issue. It's that level of care. You know, I rarely have situations where the buck stops with me. Well, sorry, not that I have no more answers. And if I don't have any more answers, I usually have someone I know to send to. But if in my opinion, you shouldn't be out of answers if you are seeing a headache specialist. At least one, like, again, I go to conferences yearly. We see what's in the works, the research, you know, and it's knowledgeable also about not that there are specialties within headache medicine. I'll give you an example. For me, I have made my niche more so chronic migraine, also facial pain. I've been seeing a lot more facial pain patients. And I feel very comfortable with that. So for instance, if I have someone who has some kind of not common migraine variant or headache variant that I'm not sure, I got some ideas of where to send to. So there's no end of the road. There should never be an end of the road.
What's the single most important step toward reclaiming truly restorative sleep?
It's different for everyone. I mean, the first step is, again, sleep hygiene, I would say, evaluating that, you know, but also not shrugging it off, not, I'll take Tylenol PM or some kind of thing is to speak with your doctor, because again, if it's another condition like obstructive sleep apnea, you're not going to treat that with a pill per se, and it's a risk factor for other life-threatening conditions. Again, not diminishing migraine. Migraine is extremely impactful and burdensome as a migraine sufferer myself, but obstructive sleep apnea could lead to heart attack, and then, well, that's, you know, going to take you out. So that's why if you feel that this is something affecting you, speak with your provider, because it should be investigated if it is a different kind of sleep condition.
Where can we learn more about what you're doing and follow your work?
Headache123.com is my website. I have a blog, a lot of educational materials. My publications, my works are up there. For instance, my latest thing actually is I work with a fantastic group with the International Headache Society. We just released the first guidelines are using neuromodulation devices, external devices for migraine. So all my stuff is up there. And I also have social media on TikTok, Instagram. My handle is my name for CohenMD. You know, I strive to do as much as I can, spread the word and advocacy.
Any resources you'd like to recommend or offer our audience?
You know, there's a lot of good active groups out there promoting, you know, headache health. American Headache Society, American Migraine Foundation, National Headache Society, Miles for Migraine, the Headache Alliance. You know, all these groups strive to improve headache care for those who, you know, don't have it. So, you know, if you feel, you know, not to sound so strong, but hopeless in a way, if you're really in a rut, there's resources out there. And I encourage you to look them up. These resources are very good at connecting you with a headache provider. I strongly encourage anyone listening to look that up and get great help and care.
So to wrap up, we talked about how sleep and migraine are tightly connected. When your sleep is off, you can become vulnerable to attacks. And also that it's not a personal failure, but a system that can be reset. All right, perfect. Thank you, Dr. Cohen.
My pleasure. And again, thank you very much for having me again.